You found your home for real sports talk for real sports fans. 1700 KBGG.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We go all the way till 6 o'clock. Still to come on the show, Derek Peck from BC Divide will join us. We'll get into the Iowa Hawkeyes. And Ken Silverstein, Big Ten Conference insider as well. All of that to come. Trent, I wanted to just kind of go back quickly into what we witnessed last night, because I am loving the Big Ten ACC Challenge, even though the Big Ten's getting their ass whooped. It's terrible. But I really enjoyed the Indiana-Duke game. Mm-hmm. I really liked the Miami-Minnesota game. That was a great game to watch with some really stud athletes performing. And then tonight, we get Notre Dame at Michigan State. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Bonzi Colson is worth the price of admission. I mean, he's undersized it there, but he mixes it up inside. Yeah, I'm with you there. I think we're going to see a great matchup there. Michigan State, I still think national championship good. And of course, you know, the thing for them really changed and turned the last offseason with the announcement coming back for his sophomore year, what they got coming back. And it changed the complexion with Miles Bridges, because – that guy was talked about as a top 10 player. It goes from Michigan State just being Michigan State good to putting them back in contention for a national title. Notre Dame and what Mike Bray has done, though. I know back in your day, Jimmy B, Digger Phelps had him rolling, and they had some great teams before that. But in my lifetime, Notre Dame, you know, through the late 80s, when I really started paying attention more and remembering more sports, Notre Dame was just kind of all right, and Bray turned him into a little better than all right. But what he's done and continuing to elevate the program, it's not like he's changing his philosophy, not like he's changing the kind of guys that he's bringing into Notre Dame. He's just, he finds the right combinations year after year. So impressive, and what people consider one of the best guys in the business. Quite the story. I know Notre Dame. Hey, I'm one of the people. I don't like Notre Dame football. I grew up Irish Catholic. I grew up hating Notre Dame, though. I mean, I'm one of the few that grew up that way. But the basketball team at Bray in general, they're a very likable program.
They are, and Bray is fun. I don't know if you saw him walk in with his shirt off, and he was coaching with shorts on and a Hawaiian shirt when they were over in the islands for that tournament. He's a fun guy, and he's living the dream right now. He knows he has a talented team. And he's secure in his position at coaching at Notre Dame, and has been for a long time. Mm-hmm. And players, I just think players go there because they want to play for that guy. I mean, that's all you can really ask for. If you got a coach that you really would like to go play for, he's one of the guys.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I look at, you know, just what we have kind of going forward. It feels like this is going to be one of the more entertaining college basketball seasons that I can remember. And I don't know exactly, it's difficult to put my finger on what it is, but from Duke being Duke, but doing it with four freshmen and how good Bagley is. And you got Grayson Allen, who is so easy to hate. Michigan State, we have Kansas here. So we got two elite level, not just good, because those two programs are good year after year, but elite level teams in the Big Ten and the Big 12, respectively. Look around the college landscape. It has the feeling this is setting up to be something pretty special. Do you got any feeling like that?
I know I do have that feeling, because there are good teams across the country. It's not like the ACC is just going to dominate, although if you ask the Big Ten, they are dominating right now, yes. But I mean, there are good teams. There's good teams in the Big 12. There's a couple of good teams in the Pac-12. There are good teams that are going to be playing also in the Big East. I mean, nobody even talks about Villanova, and they're a talented team. They really are. I was going to bring this up to you real quick. I don't know if you saw this or not. When you reference Kansas, Bill Self has got himself an issue. And his issue is he doesn't have enough guys.
No.
Because he's got guys out, some with injury, and others they are waiting to get cleared, and another player can't play until the end of December. So I don't know if I will pronounce this guy's name correctly, but I'm going to give it a go. James Sosinski. He's a 6'7" tight end on the football team for Kansas. Well, it just comes to see that apparently the coach saw him and understood that he played some college ball at a community college where he averaged nearly 20 points a game and nearly 13 rebounds a game.
Pretty good.
So guess what?
Yeah.
So Sosinski has walked on as a Jayhawk basketball player. He's on the practice team, and they're making they're going to have to make a decision if indeed they're going to activate him as a walk-on so that he can play because he's that good.
That's fun. A good story there. Well, and a big part of that is, well, you mentioned they're waiting for, I think it's, what is it, Cunliffe, something like that.
That's the guy, yeah.
But also Billy Preston still being suspended and driving around in a nicer car than you'd anticipate a college kid driving around in. Yeah, some investigation happening there. But here's the thing, Jimmy B. I think Bill Self's going to be okay. I think they're going to be just okay. I saw the only team. So a baseline, averaging a point per possession is pretty good in college basketball. There's only been one time that they've been held under 1.2 points this season. That's how high level they're playing offensively right now. They're playing very good. Getting Azubuike back after he was injured last year. Malik Newman that year off, I think, did him very well. They're not deep, but they're good. Imagine that. Kansas is going to be good in basketball. Can you believe it, Jimmy B? Shocker.
I thought they were a football school. Oh, wait, maybe not.
Tape it 11.
Maybe not. Maybe, that's not going to be the case. But at any rate, I know where I'm going to be locked and loaded tonight, Trent, and that's going to be for that Notre Dame-Michigan State game. I'm really looking forward for this one to go down.
Well, if you're out and about in the car tonight and can't get away, looking for some Thursday night football, we have you covered. Cowboys and Redskins right here on 1700 with Westwood One coverage. Every Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night football game, we have you covered. Also, just took a peek at what Westwood One's going to be serving up. College basketball is going to be starting here in a couple of weeks. Of course, we have the Kansas City Chiefs. You and I heard the game last night as they knocked off UNLV. Their playoff game on Saturday against South Dakota State. We'll have that one pregame show at 1 o'clock with the Panthers and the Jackrabbits. Lots of play-by-play. And starting next week, our high school basketball coverage will start as well. It'll kick off with West Des Moines Valley at Johnston. Girls at 6:15, the boys at 7:45. And I'll be with you on the play-by-play call. Your home for play-by-play action right here, 1700. Coming up next, we're talking Hawkeyes with Derek Peck. Welcome back, Jimmy B and TC. Trent Kind and Jim Brinson with you, taking you up until 6 o'clock tonight on your drive home. Time right now to talk some Hawkeyes with our man Derek Peck, bcdivide.com. Our conversations presented by Murphy Tower Service, taking applications right now for their telecommunications tower technician apprenticeship program. Check out all the information online at murphytower.com. Derek, what's going on?
Not a lot. How you fellas doing?
Can't complain. Well, can't complain if you watch that Iowa basketball team for the first time, and especially if you got to it late and just saw the second half. What in God's name was happening with that offense?
Oh, your guess is as good as mine there, Trent. I stopped keeping track after they were 9 minutes into the second half, and they'd only scored 3 points, and I think they actually made it to the eight-minute mark, scoring like 5 points. So it was just as ugly as it gets offensively. It looked like Iowa's offense on football crept into the basketball team there for a little bit. But, you know, I'm shocked at how poorly they've started the season. I think most Hawkeye fans are, and it's been really disappointing.
It has been.
They shot 19% in the second half. Is this a case now with the way that, and you said you're so disappointed in the way that this has gone, that they have not yet, but have the potential of maybe just playing themselves out of an NCAA tournament opportunity?
Yeah, actually, Jimmy B, I think they might have already. I mean, I really do believe that. Fans in particular don't understand how important these non-conference games are. And you know, I know we've talked about it, we've hashed it out. Scheduling a week out of conference week out of conference opponents, you know, you've really got to take care of business, and it leaves you very little margin for error. And the way they've started the season, you know, unless they just turn the corner and play lights out during Big Ten Conference, I can't see them getting into the tournament at this point. Now they still have a chance to, but it's going to take a heck of an effort in conference play. And boy, it seems like this season conference play is starting soon. I just looked at the calendar and they're playing Penn State on Saturday, and it seems like that's really early. But hey, at least we'll get some good games coming up, and then obviously the big showdown with Iowa State's not too far away either.
Yeah, and an important stretch here. Of course, they're playing earlier this year with the conference play because of the Big Ten tournament being in beautiful New York City and Madison Square Garden. They have to move it up a week, and they had to find a way to get all 18 conference games in, and this is what's happening for this season. Because of that, this Iowa team needs to turn it around right now, and their margin for error is completely gone. Now, the good news is Nicholas Bear at least got on the floor, didn't shoot it very well, but you know, he is out there doing some things, you know, a chance to get some live action. He looked rusty. The shot wasn't good. You got to figure he's going to be better Saturday against Penn State. But the margin of error is gone. And now you have to not only win these two games, the next two, Penn State and then the road game against Indiana. You got Iowa State after that. Later in non-conference play, you have Colorado in a neutral floor. These games are all important. And you got to find a way to get in the win column and get some positivity back. But the team isn't playing well. And it looks lethargic at times, not getting stopped. It almost looks like they're just out there playing at the field house, just playing some pickup ball. They're not out there competing at the highest level you would want to see.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, I've tried to diagnose it, you know, as much as any other Hawkeye fan has. And I think my opinion would be they losing Jock, I think, is affecting them more than I thought that it would. And mainly because it's almost like they don't know who to go to on offense. And, you know, Bohannon is always good for some bombs from deep, and he gets hot, and he's a streaky shooter, and when that happens, that's kind of instant offense for him. But when it doesn't happen and he's covered and he's not making those types of shots, who do they go to? I mean, you know, Tyler Cook played incredibly well in the first half against Virginia Tech, and I think that's probably, at least that would be my strategy moving forward, with their size down low. You know, I really think they've got to try to be an inside-out team. And that's, you know, that's what I'm hoping they try to start going towards, because, yeah, in the second half against Virginia Tech, they couldn't get anything going. They looked lost. You know, but the other side of it is, you know, last I checked, Virginia Tech was leading the country in scoring. I think Virginia Tech has a heck of a team, and they're really athletic, and it was just a pretty bad matchup. But, you know, with that said, I was 38-38 with them at halftime. So it was just a complete meltdown in that second half.
Hey, look, you got to play who's on the schedule. And you can't say, well, we're not going to schedule these guys because we think it's a bad matchup. You can't do that.
Right.
Yeah, you can't do that. And this is you're making a very strong case where this team is at this particular moment. If they split, win against Penn State at home, lose at Indiana, who played Duke really tough last night, but if they lose that game 1-1 coming out of this early in Big Ten play, I mean, you would take that, right?
Sure. Yeah, I'd take it, you know. And then obviously that game against Iowa State's, you know, going to be huge given what they've, you know, they've already dropped the ball in a couple of these non-conference games, and they failed to get, you know, a premier matchup in the Cayman Islands. I was hoping they'd make it to at least play Cincinnati. Play and lose to Cincinnati is better than what they ended up doing. They didn't get to that point, and then, you know, they had a chance against Virginia Tech to get a notable win, and they obviously dropped the ball there. And, you know, just looking at the schedule, too, what's interesting to me is that Iowa State only has one game between now and their matchup against Iowa on December 7th. They play Northern Illinois on December 4th. Meanwhile, Iowa's got two games squeezed in between now and December 7th. They've got Penn State on the 2nd and then Indiana on the 4th. So they're going to have a little bit more action before Iowa State. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I would probably make the argument that it's a good thing because they've got some kinks that they need to get worked out, and the best way to do that is to get on the court and play.
Well, from a disappointing run in basketball, a great weekend with the Hawkeye win on Black Friday over Nebraska on the football side of things. Derek, when you go through and you look at that second half domination, a lot different than the basketball side of things.
The opposite, man.
As bad as that Nebraska team, and that was a putrid Cornhusker squad, still felt good to take it to the black shirts.
It always feels good to take it to Nebraska. Yeah, you know, I've had the displeasure of working with some big time Nebraska fans, and they're obnoxious. So I'm sure they probably felt the same way about me. But it always feels good to stick it to them. And most Nebraska fans still think that they're better than what they really are. I think the last couple of years have helped lower that a little bit. That's the interesting dynamic with Nebraska, is just kind of the Bo Pelini era. You know, nine wins wasn't enough. They think he's a jerk. He gets canned because of that. And then Mike Riley comes in, and the wins just drop off the face of the earth. And now they kind of maybe realize what they had with Pelini, and they maybe realize that nine wins wasn't so bad. But, it's always good to stick it to Nebraska, and it'll be interesting to see what direction they go. Obviously, Scott Frost is probably the number one target.
Yeah, well, no, he is the target. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Don't you find it interesting that what you just referenced with Pelini getting the heave-ho and Nebraska just waiting for Frost to play this game coming this weekend with Central Florida and all of the problems that are going on in Tennessee right now, which is Tennessee is the laughingstock of the nation. At least Nebraska's not that bad.
Yeah, you know, and that's a lesson. I think I hope that Nebraska fans and the school are taking note of what's going on in Tennessee too, because Nebraska's been somewhat of a coaching carousel as well. Not as bad as Tennessee, but you just got to be careful what you wish for. And right now nobody wants to go to Tennessee, and at least with Scott Frost they'd have a guy who really cares about the program. I think it'd be a great hire, and if they can get him, it's kind of a no-brainer in most people's opinion. But hopefully that's a lesson to most college programs, because right now I don't know who they're gonna settle for over in Tennessee. They might have to go back after Lane Kiffin.
Yeah,
I would love to
see
that.
That's what the fans. Yeah, that's what the fans are clamoring for. They've got a petition. Bring Lane back.
Yeah, it's crazy. It would be quite the circle of events if that happens.
Well, we're talking here with Derek Peck, BCDivide.com, taking a look at the Hawkeyes. Bold destination, certainly on a lot of people's minds. It is a runaway from the people that we talk to. They want to go to Nashville. The Hawkeye fans, drivable trip, save a little bit of money. It was a 7-5 kind of year. That seems to be the prevailing notion in the fan base, but the more you look around, seeing a lot of pinstripe bowls, I just have a feeling Hawkeye fans maybe not going to get what they want for Christmas this year.
Well, did you guys see what happened over on their website?
I did.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that to me, some intern got in trouble. I don't know why would they have that, unless they're just getting some of that. I mean, I own a website. I know how it works. Unless they're just getting some articles up and ready to release as soon as possible after the bowls are announced, which is possible.
Yes.
But it certainly seems like somebody published something that shouldn't have been published. And it's possible that they had one of those articles for the different scenarios, so I'm not in any way, shape, or form guaranteeing that they're going to Nashville. But it certainly looks that way to me. That would be what I would guess, and that would be what I would hope too. I'm right along with most Hawkeye fans as well. It would be drivable. I think you'd see more black and gold in the stands, and just because this is a mediocre year, fans aren't going to be wanting to spend a whole lot of money, and that would make it a little bit more reasonable to make the trip. Especially because, I've also heard Memphis as a destination for Iowa State, so
yes,
there could be some Iowans who could potentially circle both those games in their calendar and make the drive in one trip.
Yeah, I did the double dip, took a family vacation there a couple summers ago, hit Nashville, hit Memphis. It's about a three-hour drive. It's easy to do.
Right.
I think it'd be great to see the game in Nashville, the Music City Bowl. That's on Friday. The Liberty Bowl is on Saturday. Double dip. Be great to see, and certainly great for BC Divide, you and your brother. You guys could do it together.
There you go. Yeah, we could have a tax write-off, right?
There you go. Yeah.
If we could stand each other on the trip.
I like how you're thinking. Hey, good stuff as always, Derek. Great catching up with you again. BCDivide.com is the website. Talking Hawkeyes today. Thanks for your time today, Derek.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good night.
Derek Peck with us. here on the program. Again, there are our conversations with the guys, Cody on the Cyclones and Derek on the Hawkeyes, presented by Murphy Tower Service. We'll take a break here. Come back with more on the other side. We're jumping into things on the Big Ten as a whole. Look at the Big Ten championship game with Wisconsin and Ohio State. And Jimmy B, I got to get Ken Silverstein's thoughts on LeBron getting ejected. I want to see where he is on that one a couple nights ago. We'll see what Ken's got coming up for us next. Ken Silverstein joins us on the other side. We take you up until 6. It's Jimmy B and TC.
And welcome back, everybody. We roll till the top of the hour right here, Jimmy B and TC on the Big Talker 1700. Time to head to our Big Ten Conference insider. That is Ken Silverstein. He joins us right now. Kenny, how are you, man? Are you ready for some football?
I am, and I'm still waiting for the phone to ring. Not from you guys. Love talking to you guys. I'm still waiting for the phone call from Knoxville. Okay, I figure if I wait long enough, yeah, Tennessee will call me about the gig.
And they've called everybody, and nobody wants that.
I figure they're going in alphabetical order. And when they got to Tiano, that was SC. They didn't go SI, but they're circling back to yours truly. I'm just hopeful.
Okay, fair enough. While we got you and we're talking coaches, real quick before we get to the Big Ten championship game, Scott Frost in Nebraska, your sources, done deal, right?
Yeah, I'd be shocked. I mean, he could have gone most likely to Florida, and I think the Florida job would have been better. He's been in state at UCF. He's built some relationships with the high school coaches and so forth. There's a lot more talent in the state of Florida, South Georgia, and so forth, where, yes, you're battling against Florida State, a rejuvenated Miami, USF, University of South Florida, and so forth. But there's enough fish in the sea to, be very, very good every year. We talked about it the last week or two. You take over Nebraska, I get it. I mean, an alum, I get the whole Tom Osborne thing, kiss the ring, I get all of that. But this is not the 70s, 80s, and 90s. This whole thing has been turned upside down. And there are just not enough players in state. They've gone to Texas in the past. It's very difficult now with Tom Herman at Texas. He's got the number two recruiting class in the country. A&M is going to most likely get Jimbo Fisher. He can flat-out recruit. You catch my drift in regard to Texas. Nebraska's always been able to go to California. Chip Kelly's going to scoop up guys. USC's going to scoop up guys. Oregon's going to scoop up guys. Washington's going to scoop up guys. I don't know. I get it in some ways, and I respect it totally, but I don't know if it's a really good job right now. I think it's a pretty average job, and the problem is why, and it goes into something we've talked about for the last umpteenth years on the program, and that is the West isn't any good. And Wisconsin's winning this thing every year, and yeah, Iowa had a nice run a couple years ago, tip of the hat to Kirk and the boys, and that was a hell of a year. And, you know, who's going to make a run at Wisconsin? And I don't mean just one year, I mean every year. And there is nobody. Yeah, I know you're going to say, well, what about Northwestern this year? Okay, 9-3. I love Pat Fitzgerald. I love their academics. That's the problem. You can't recruit at the same level as some other schools because of the academics. So until they move Michigan State or somebody else into the conference or into the West, or until somebody can have like a 3 to 5 year run consistently where they're winning basically 10 or more, okay, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take 10 or more to make a run at them. Otherwise, you can stamp Wisconsin to win next year and so forth. And real quick, guys, I've already looked at the non-conference schedules for 2018. You may say, Ken, you have no life. Why are you looking already to 2018 season when the 2017 season isn't over yet? Real quick, to back up my argument about Wisconsin, look at the non-conference schedule for Wisconsin next year. It features Western Kentucky, the Lobos of New Mexico, and what's left of BYU. You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me, Barry Alvarez. You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me with that non-conference schedule. And I don't want to hear, well, we're Wisconsin and nobody wants to play. Excuse me. You're not Michigan. You're not Alabama. You're not Ohio State. You're good, but you don't have that kind of pedigree. Okay, you just don't. The numbers don't lie, and this is a joke. what Wisconsin is trying to do with its schedule and non-conference schedule. I haven't looked at 19. That's too far out. But 18 does not look good. And some might say, well, maybe BYU will rebound. I think they were 4-8 this year. I'm not counting on BYU to rebound. So I'll get off my soapbox about Wisconsin and their non-conference schedule. It was a joke this year, and it's going to be a bigger joke next season.
There is still conference games. They still play nine.
That's true. I don't know. I don't dispute they got to play nine games, and I don't dispute that when you look at the nine games they have to play, that some of them are more difficult than others. But there's argument that hurt them this year up until Tuesday when they finally got into the top four. This non-conference schedule next year is not going to help them. You got to play at least of the three. You got to play somebody really good.
But that's who BYU was, Ken. BYU, when that game was scheduled, this isn't basketball.
I don't know.
It's not done the season before.
I don't know how many years out the schedule was made. I get what you're saying.
I would guess four or five. Four or five.
It's still not good enough. It just isn't. It's not Notre Dame, okay?
They have Notre Dame. They have Notre Dame in 2020. They have Virginia Tech coming up.
That's not next year.
But
okay, these folks for Wisconsin who keep waving this flag of, well, you know, our non-conference schedule shouldn't have hurt. Excuse me? Look at some of these games next year in non-conference. Michigan's playing Notre Dame in non-conference. Ohio State is playing TCU in Texas. They're going to play them in Arlington at Jerry World, okay? Let me look at one other that jumped out at me. There was one other in the East particularly. Michigan State's playing Arizona State. Not that good. It's okay. Penn State's got Pitt. That's not good enough. Maryland's got Texas. That's a rematch of a two-year contract from this past season. Let's look to the West real quick. Iowa's best game is Iowa State. I get it, rivalry. And it looks better because ISU is playing better. I've already gone over Wisconsin. Nebraska's got Colorado as their best non-conference game next year. Minnesota has got nobody. Purdue has got Boston College. Not great. Illinois, disgraceful. They're non-conference. Oh, I take that back. I apologize to the Illini. They got South Florida. That's a good game. That's a pretty good game for Illinois non-conference. And Northwestern, kudos to the boys in Evanston. They have Notre Dame as non-conference. That's how you do it. You don't schedule like Wisconsin scheduling. I know what you're saying about 2020, but we're not even in 18 yet.
Right, but that's the reality. The reality, though, Ken, is that's when things are scheduled. This I just found out. BYU and Wisconsin scheduled this in 2011. BYU in 2011 was...
Then you know what?
Just listen to this.
Phone and get out of the game. Get out of the game. You pay them off.
Oh, come on.
Wisconsin's got money.
You
pay them off.
All right.
Schedule a better game.
I like to live in reality, though, Ken. That's not happening. In reality, that's not happening.
I'm tired of this non-conference schedules that these schools are scheduling. The big boys take big people on.
Who?
And the mid-level and the lightweights are playing at a level. And if Wisconsin wants to be really a big boy, and they're not, I don't care. You know, that they're number four. I look at the roster. I don't see it. Whatever. The bottom line is you got to act like a big boy, okay? You got to strut, and they're not strutting enough to take on folks like Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, the real big boys in this conference. Now, that doesn't mean they won't win Saturday, okay? I'm picking them to win. I got them winning 28-24. I think this is the best Wisconsin team I've seen. It's not great. Not great. Their quarterback play is not very good. And I'm being kind by saying he's not very good. Okay. The running back is a stud. I give him all the credit in the world. That was a hell of a recruitment to get him out of New Jersey and get him away from Penn State, who recruits New Jersey really, really well, to get him away from Ohio State, that's recruiting New Jersey really hard these days, and others. Kudos to Barry Alvarez. Better yet, kudos to the coaching staff, more importantly, to get him out of there, because he is a stud. He's going to be a first-round pick after his junior year. He is a big-time player. Is he the best running back in the conference? No, I still think Barkley is the best. Barkley's going to be a top 10 or so pick, and it's tough to compare a junior with a freshman because the junior's got a longer resume, but that's a home run. This kid can flat-out play. But they're not loaded with first-round draft picks. But to the credit, they do a great job of coaching up kids. They get a lot of three-star kids. They coach them up real well. And they hit on this running back. And with their offense, that's the key. You got to have a stud. Is he better than Ron Dane of a few years ago? I'd say what I've seen so far out of a freshman year, he's better than Ron Dane. And at Wisconsin, Ron Dane is godlike. So I'm picking Wisconsin. 28-24.
Okay, all right. All right, you just ripped Wisconsin for what they're doing, and now you're picking them. All right, yeah. In your illustrious wisdom, how do you have them beating Ohio State? Because Ohio State is the favorite in the game.
Yeah, I know. Well, first of all, I think from what I've been told, Barrett's hurt. I know he had surgery yesterday. Excuse me,
right,
Sunday. I think he's more, a source told me, he's more hurt than meets the eye. Okay? They're going to downplay it. It's Ohio State. You would do the same thing. Iowa would do the same thing. Iowa State would do the same thing. Everybody in the country would downplay it. You don't want to let your opposition know that you're starting QB on the other team. I'm even surprised that it got out that he had surgery. Okay? They probably did their best to keep it quiet. They just couldn't do it. Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch, one of the best in the biz, was able to break it. Nice job to the bearded one, and it's legit. He had arthroscopic surgery on Sunday. You don't have arthroscopic surgery after someone bangs into your knee while warming up on the sideline, which in 38-plus years of doing this, I have never seen or heard something like that ever occurring. But it did. Obviously, he was hurt. They need it. You don't do arthroscopic surgery because you want to. You do it because you must do it. So I don't know what he's got. A source told me, how did he put it? He said he's probably going to be at best 70%. Okay. Will he start? If I know Urban Meyer, yes, he will start because Barrett's a warrior. He's a very tough hombre, and he will start. But I'm not expecting a whole bunch out of him. I think you'll see the redshirt freshman, Mr. Haskins. And can he do a Cardale Jones? I don't know. He's got a lot of ability. The kid is a big-time prospect, and he will be their starter next year. But you're asking a lot, or they're asking a lot, to, one, come in and help beat Michigan, which he did, and, two, come back a week later and beat the dreaded, so-called dreaded, Wisconsin Badgers. So, I think they're in a tough spot. I think this is Wisconsin's best team. If you go back and watch last year's game, which Ohio State beat them at Camp Randall in overtime, Wisconsin jumped out early. Ohio State does what they do lately, come back, wear them down, have better talent, get to overtime, sack Hornibrook, game over, Buckeyes win. So I think also, guys, one other thing, I'm a probability guy. I think after a while, the odds build that the other team, I know Michigan obviously wouldn't agree with this because they're getting trampled statistically by Ohio State head-to-head, but if you throw that out head-to-head, usually when one team is on a streak against, quote, another team, eventually, unless you're talking about a huge, huge difference in talent, team, we'll call it Team X, in this case Wisconsin, beats them. So probability, neutral field, Barrett being hurt, a redshirt freshman having to play if he does have to play, and this being, in my mind, the best Wisconsin team I've seen in the last 18, 19 years of covering this thing. I think the odds makers are wrong. I think it's 6.5. I think it's going to go down the more it comes out about Barrett's injury. What it will go down to, I don't know. I'm not smart enough from a Vegas perspective to give that answer or have a thought on that. But I think this, it's their year. I just think sometimes they're on a roll, and I just think they're going to win. They don't have to win a best of 3, 5, or 7. They just need to win one game. One game on a neutral field, perfect conditions. I think Hornibrook will make a play or two. It won't be pretty because he doesn't throw a pretty ball. But he'll find the tight end, and it'll be the difference. And I have it 28-24 in pretty much a rock'em sock'em game. I think it'll be close to probably maybe last 5 minutes. And Hornibrook will make one or two plays in the game because that's his M.O. He won't make many more than that. I don't think he's qualified or equipped athletically to do that. The resume doesn't indicate that he can, But I think he'll make just enough plays to win it, and they'll take on most likely Clemson. And no, they will not beat Clemson, assuming Clemson stays at number one and beats Miami, which I'd be shocked if they don't beat the Canes on Saturday.
All right, Ken, got one more thing for you I want to get to off the football path. LeBron James, for the first time in his career, ejected the other night from a game. What's happening in Cleveland? What's been the talker about that after LeBron gets jettisoned early?
Well, I was there for that. I was surprised because he's never been thrown out. Well documented. I think it was a very quick whistle twice to get him tossed. I think it's the ref trying to make a name for himself. He's been in the league a few years, but quite frankly, 99 out of 100 people that were in that crowd would never have known he was an NBA referee. So I think it was the ref's ego a little bit. And, did LeBron show him up a little bit? Yeah, possibly. But I've seen a lot worse not get tossed. But, okay, fine, he'll pay the fine. It's not like a big deal to him economically. Obviously, it's Murphy money to him. They've won 9 in a row. They'll beat Atlanta tonight in Atlanta. Should get to 10. Isaiah Thomas, who was the key in the deal with Kyrie Irving, should be back, assuming there are no setbacks. I'll give Brian Windhorst credit for ESPN. The other day reported he should be back by mid-December. My math tells me that's about 2 weeks from now. I'll be a little bit more conservative and say it's 3 weeks, but it'll be somewhere in the middle to the third week of December. And we'll see. We'll see how much gas he's got in the tank. Hip injuries are tricky. And we'll see if he's 80-90% of what he was. It will be a welcome addition. If he's not, then the Kyrie trade suffers mightily, at least from the Cavaliers' perspective.
All right, 2 minutes left. Derrick Rose walks away assessing the rest of his life. Does he return? And if he does return, would the team even take him back after what he's done?
Well, I've been in contact with him by texting, and that's, I guess, a good thing. He's got a huge deal with Adidas, and it's tens of millions of dollars. And I don't know his economics. I don't know if he's blown through all his money or, you know, if he saved it. I don't know that. I think, let's put it this way, I'll rephrase it. If I was him, I would come back. Now, when he comes back, I don't know. I don't know whether it's going to be 2 weeks from now, a month from now, 2 months from now. I don't know. I think he will come back. He'll end up being a backup to Isaiah Thomas, who we talked about moments ago. And I think it would be silly for him at 28, 29 years old, even with all the injuries, to walk away. So I think he will come back, but he's a different cat. So you never know. But if you're asking me would I do it, I'd come back.
Good stuff. Hey, Ken, appreciate it. We will have a long summer to holler about non-conference schedules, and we will do
that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the season has flown by. It started on August 31st. What is today? November 30th. So what is that? September, October, November. That's roughly 90 days. I can't believe that 90 days has flown by. We got a lot of bowl games coming up. We'll see who's playing who and who is gung-ho about it, as you guys well aware. Some of these teams are going to go into bowl games disappointed. Others are going to be very excited about it, like Indiana, like Purdue. You know Purdue's going to be juiced about a bowl game. Others are going to be, maybe not. Depends on where they're playing and who they're playing. So we'll get into that, obviously, over the next few weeks and see how the Big Ten fares head-to-head against some of the other big boys around the country.
All right, Ken. Thank you, man. Have a good weekend.
Have a good
Enjoy
weekend,
the games.
Everybody. Enjoy the championship games.
You got it. There you go. Ken Silverstein on the Big Ten. I'm telling you right now, you know, I know we do our picks tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like in his corner, at least on the Wisconsin-Ohio State game, where it's one of those destiny things. And I'm really struggling, Trent, going back and forth there. Everybody says, oh, God, Ohio State's going to rout them. And I haven't seen anybody rout that defense yet, have you?
I haven't heard anybody say that Ohio State's going to rout them. We must be listening to different people. All I've heard this week is Wisconsin's going to cover. Wisconsin's going to win this game. I haven't heard many people in the Buckeye corner. So We must be listening to different things, Jimmy B. It's been all Badger love. It's been all Badger love in terms of gambling. Saw earlier today, I think it was 86% of the bets were on Wisconsin at this point. Yeah, 82%, I look at it right now, of the cash coming in on the Badgers offshore. 83, it just moved up. Another bet.
Wow.
As I was talking, look at that.
Breaking news right here on the show. It moved up 1 point.
And Ken's dead wrong, by the way, about scheduling.
BYU, I'm going to agree with you.
They had won double-digit games five of the last 6 years when that was scheduled. They didn't know they were going to be 4-9 this year. You know the last time that BYU lost 9 games? Take a guess.
I'm going to say in the 70s.
1949. The last time they lost 9 football games.
Oh, my God.
Happened this
year. I did not call that game. I want you to know I did not call that game.
But you watched it. Well, you listened to it on the radio. There wasn't even probably television for you back then. Jimmy B, we got Monday night. No, we have Thursday night football tonight.
Thursday night.
Yeah. I was almost rewinding the week. Don't want to do that. Cowboys and Redskins. That do anything for you?
Yeah. You know, I'm going to watch it. It's a great NFC East rivalry game between those teams, but both teams are trending in the wrong direction. You and I both know that. But, man, oh, man, if Dallas loses again, oh, boy, there's going to be hell to pay in Big D. I mean, the lynch mobs will be out. It'll be like when they're running to Frankenstein's castle to get the doctor. It's going to be like that.
I'll take your word for it. Jim, picks tomorrow of Football Friday. There's not a whole lot of them left. We will get into all the football coming up tomorrow. Enjoy your evening. If you're out and about, we have you covered. Westwood One coverage of Thursday Night Football. Dallas and Washington here on 1700 KBGG. Have a good night, everybody.